Okay, hello and welcome to Q&A Quest episode 433, the one where we tell daylight savings time to go fuck itself. I'm your host, Mike Apps, aka Wheels, and with me as always.
Inattentive, didn't occur any painful now, sir.
20 some years without having to worry about daylight savings time at all, and glad.
You motherfucker.
God damn it.
Oh, you moved to a country that doesn't bother with it. Really?
Yeah, I don't think they like me enough.
And this is Smokin' Joe Gamer, the guy who likes daylight savings time.
Why?
I'd get be out. Fine if we didn't know which.
Yeah. My stance is pick one or the other and stay on it. I don't care which one.
But did you ever hear the reason why Japan stopped it?
Because no. It's stupid?
Well, actually, technically, yes, but no. Japan tried it out in the post-war period and gave up after like 5 or 7 years, somewhere in there. Because the idea was that, it'll give the salarymen some time to get home and be with their families before sunset.
They don't want to do that.
Without factoring in the fact that most of the salarymen of the 50s and 60s considered it an insult to their honor to be home before sunset. So this extra time ended up getting spent with them sitting in their cars with the air conditioner on, listening to the radio.
Let's hear about baseball.
Yeah, and so the Japanese government took one look at the data after a few years and was just like, this just isn't worth it. Okay. I think they were only doing it to try and make the U.S. military command happy in the first place. So, but, you know what?
I forgot to open the map in Fallout 4, and I'm ready to uninstall the game.
Isn't the Y button? It's the top button.
It's not.
Y or F?
It's not.
Is it B? And it's B. B or A?
It's B. I kind of hate this game. This partially has to do with the death loop it saved me into last week.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I can imagine.
What part of this map looks like it's Fenway Park?
B.
That's all I care about.
Well, I'm trying to play Resident Evil on one screen while I have the stream up on the other, but now they both have low frame rate, so that's not going to work. Okay.
Talk about RPGs, though, because I reviewed one, and that review is up, which means I
you
can talk
about...
You have
been champing at the bit to talk about this for months.
Yeah.
What is the mystery game?
Monster Hunter Stories 3, Twisted Reflection. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Gave it a 4 out of 5. It's the best game in the series so far, which is just 3 games. But ask me some questions. What do you have? What questions do you have about this game?
How many monsters did you hunt?
Not that many.
Really?
So mostly capturing them.
Mm. I mean, why are they called monsties instead of monsters?
Because it's probably because it's cute, and the original game was kind of tied into an anime, and very,
yeah, that wasn't a series.
Very no. Like, I'm sorry, I'm going to answer the question seriously.
Not a serious question, but please answer it. That would be it'll be fun.
If you go back and look at the first game, it looks very kiddie, which makes sense.
I remember that much from when I played the demo way back when.
Yeah, and I mean the sequel kind of was too, but. 3 is very much grown up a bit. I mean, it's not like a little bit. I would say more like more respectful of people actually playing the game, I guess. It's not like there's blood and guts or anything, but yeah, it feels much less kiddie and much more just like reminiscent of the recent Pokemon games, I'd say. Not that those feel more adult or anything, but just more respectful of the audience.
More juice.
Yes, exactly. Oh, I just
I've actually seen that a number of people have been remarking on how this is like much more robust than they were expecting.
Yes. Definitely. So if you go back and play the the first two games, you'll see a lot of the battle system around revolves around kind of a dumb rock, paper, scissors system where you've got power attacks, quick attacks, and technical attacks. And obviously one counters one and loses to the other, etc. So largely the battle system would revolve around that. You'd have to kind of watch the pattern of the monsters you're fighting, figure out what kind of attacks they'd use, and they'd periodically switch to a different type as battle wore on. And is it kind of reminiscent of Monster Hunter as a large. You have to watch the patterns of monsters as you're getting deeper into the fight. They get pissed off and use different attacks. So it kind of worked the same way, but it was kind of very simple and kind of clunky. Like, there are special attacks you can use. Your monster would kind of pick its own thing unless you specifically gave it a special attack to use, but you couldn't pick like a regular attack for it to use. So if you didn't have like the, I think it was kinship points to use a special attack, you kind of had to just live with whatever your monster was doing. And you often didn't want to use those points because those points also, when they get high enough, tied into super attacks where you actually ride on your monster and the two of you fight together. So it kind of didn't work that great. I mean, the games are fun. I'm not going to say they're bad because they're not. But it left a lot to be desired. So they've kind of fixed that in a few ways. First of all, the rock, paper, scissors system is still there, but it's no longer feels like... It feels like an element of the combat instead of the its complete totality. Focus. Yes. Like, there are certainly times, even in the last boss, where, like, and I think often it was my computer-controlled companion picking the correct attack to counter, like, a boss's attack and have us not all die. it's still there. It's still a major factor, but there's also lots of attacks, special attacks that don't tie into that system at all. Like, they have a different color, and they can't be countered, which is kind of cool. So in addition to that, what they've done is they've kind of decoupled the whole point system that builds up to ride on your monster and use super attacks with the points you use to use special attacks. It's now called stamina. It refills a little bit automatically every turn, kind of tying more into like the Monster Hunter series where you have a stamina bar, and that would kind of tie into blocking and sort of your other special attacks. So now you can kind of use special attacks almost every turn, which means you can have a lot more combat options. Like, you can use...
See, that sounds like it really changes the combat economy.
Kind of completely.
Well, that's not a bad thing.
No, not at all. And even adding further onto that, they've changed how weapons work too. So in the first two games, weapons were kind of like whatever. Like, you'd have special attacks kind of similar to the attacks they'd have in the main Monster Hunter game. But that was kind of it. And now each type of weapon kind of has its own systems to it. Like, for example, the longsword has different stances. And like a super bar you'll build up that ties into some special attacks. The hunting horn, which is far and away the best weapon type in the game. Like, bar none. Has lots of buffs you can use, including like a healing move you can use. and you can also, there's like in Monster Hunter proper, there's songs you can do. If you use certain attacks in a certain order, it kind of puts the right notes out there, and then you do a song, and then you can let you use special buffs. It's kind of got the same system here. And other weapons kind of work similarly. So, you know, when you're picking a new weapon, it's not just a matter of this has higher numbers or a different element that I'm looking for right now. It's what type of weapon, what kind of numbers, and you can also have, you can have three different weapons and you can switch between them each turn in combat. So you have a lot of options to work with. And it makes combat really good, which is good because battles are very long, which was kind of a problem with the earlier games. But instead of, interestingly, I would have expected they were going to make combat shorter. Instead, they made less combat, but made it way better. And one of the ways they made it way better is kind of taking a page out of the Saga book. Your HP and your hearts, which are, if you lose all hearts in a battle, it's game over. Those all refill between every single battle.
Oh, that's good.
Yes. So you can explore around, you can get into battles, you don't have to worry about kind of your healing items at all. And honestly, I barely used healing items because I was using the hunting horn so much, and it's really good. but you will need them later in the game because it does get a lot harder. But it really impressed me how much they moved the series ahead. Is it as good as, say, like the recent Pokemon games? No. But it's so much closer now than it was before, and that's exciting. And this game is definitely worth playing.
Cool.
Any other questions?
Favorite monster or monstie?
that is a tough one. I don't remember its name because it's not one I'd seen a lot. Hold on, let me look up. Probably my favorite was what the hell is its name? The new one they added in Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak. I'm trying to remember its name. Nelzino. So it's a dragon, type, and it has attacks that kind of like vampire attacks. They heal it, so it was very convenient in that regard, and definitely very good for the late game, which, as I said, can get very hard if you're not sitting there min-maxing everything. But probably that one. You do get a, and this is not new for this game, it's kind of all of them, you get a Rathalos, which is the signature Monster Hunter monster right away. That stays with you the whole game, so that is cool. And you can't actually fly, but you can glide around the maps, which is kind of cool.
I call the big one Rathy.
Why did this stupid game give me so much junk?
Some of it's not junk. Some of it you need for crafting.
Have you considered, like, Wheels, that you are junk?
I have. But I discarded that idea.
I suggest keeping all of the duct tape that you find.
Meh.
It's like gold in the wasteland.
Do I need to keep this minigun when I don't even have power armor?
Well, it's still usable. It depends on what build you're doing.
build? You think I care about this game enough that I'm doing a build?
I'm not honest.
Any other Monster Hunter questions?
Are there any zombies?
There are no zombies.
There are no zombie
that
monsters?
I know of.
No.
If they make a fourth game, would you play it?
Of course.
Okay.
A fourth out of five.
And let's see. My requests for the fourth game would be more weapon types. There's some from the main series they haven't added in yet, and it's kind of light on weapon types, although obviously they're a lot better now, but they could use some more. Do more with the story. Like, they approach some environmental topics with the story and kind of don't do much with it. I kind of wish they did more. I would expect this game's going to do quite well, and I am hopeful we will see a fourth game in the near future. Anything else, or should we move on?
Yeah.
Moving on. No further questions about Monster Hunter.
Okay. Try there's a demo out there. You should try it.
Yeah, I tried it's the no demo of the match, first, yeah. either the first or second one I played the demo and said, oh, it's like Pokemon. It's not like Monster Hunter. Okay, cool. I might like this. So
you should play the third one. It's much better.
Yeah.
So you would recommend people that if they're interested that it's okay to jump to 3?
Yes. It references the earlier games. You do not know you don't need to know jack about them. So yeah, just play the third game.
You don't know jack.
Did someone else talk?
Finished RE9 three times.
Oh my god.
What, three times?
Resident Evil 9.
Huh. I saw the poster for it in the store, and then I just realized what the joke was with the subtitle Requiem.
Yeah.
Did you get what the joke was?
No.
So look at the position of the letter not of the number 9 in written against Requiem, and realize that in Japanese the number 9 is pronounced ku.
Requiemu.
It's the kui in Requiem.
Oh. Nine. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Also, if you were to do RE9, you could do if you abbreviate it as they sometimes do. You can, because Capcom, even in Japan, loves hiding RE in the title. So it'll be like the remakes in Japan were like Biohazard RE2, because it's a remake and it's a remake of 2. Also RE. But yeah, so this also allows you to do, if you have Biohazard RE9, you can also pronounce it like Biohazard REQ. It's cute. It's a pun.
Cool.
It's funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, I finished it three times. I've got infinite ammo. As I was starting to disengage with the conversation, I was booting the game up again because I guess I'm just broken. But yeah, it's really good. It's very, very good. It's not an RPG, so I won't talk about it. It has some RPG elements, but I won't talk about it because it's not an RPG.
It is extremely good.
It's RPG adjacent, but yeah.
Everything has RPG in it, so we got to be more specific, yeah. Or else I'll just talk about Resident Evil forever.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I was on the Game of the Year podcast on Saturday, and I talked about Metroid Prime 4 a little bit for some of the categories, and I'm like, it's RPG adjacent, and they're like, fine. So there was a category for best or worst sidekick, and I said, oh, well, Miles McKenzie is the best. But I don't think anyone else had played it, so they just kind of listened to me talk for a few minutes about it.
We've all been there.
Yeah. So be on the lookout for that, listeners. The RPG Cast Game of the Year podcast that I was on for the second time. The first time was back in 2019.
Nice. So, there's an award named after me.
Yeah, there is. And I don't remember who won it. It was the award is Everyone Else or Wheels is Wrong. And I just made sure I since you couldn't be on it, I told them, oh, he loved Shadow Labyrinth. And yeah, so and Chris said, oh yeah, and a lot of people didn't like that game, so I guess I don't know if it won the award, that's but
actually true also.
That's what he said. I don't know. I didn't play it. I don't know.
I think he's mistaken. We're thinking of something else. Like I didn't hear see a lot of people talking about it, but I don't think I saw like anyone say like this game is bad.
Yeah. I think it just slipped under a lot of people's radar.
Yeah, and then Silk Song, which is better than Silk Song.
Ooh, spicy.
Yeah, we didn't have a lot to say about that game.
Good.
Other than a lot of people were predicting that it wasn't going to come out in 2025, and then it did.
It was usually a safe bet.
The game is frustrating, but maybe we'll talk about that in the Metroid Minute. That's a lie. I have other things to talk about.
Yeah,
are you going to make me put on the clock while I am busy doing a quick run through of the opening of RE9 again?
Yeah, I am. Let's do it right now. Let's get it over with.
Okay, give me a moment. I'm going to set the clock. Okay. So how about them Knicks?
No, Celtics. Go Celtics.
Okay, you have 1 minute. Start in 3, 2.
I turned on the flashlight in Fallout. I don't know how, and I don't know how to turn it off. Okay, timer ready?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, here we go.
3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, beat Agalos, that Wonder Boy-ish type game. The last boss really hard, so I went ran around and grabbed all the heart containers, we'll call them, and was able to beat it pretty easily after that. Very cool game, highly recommend. It was on sale for like $4 recently. It's pretty cheap. Regardless, you people should play it. The next retro-styled Metroidvania I'm going to play is, I forget the name.
Time is money, motherfucker.
Astalon Tears of the Earth or something.
Yep.
Yes, thank you. I started it up. You get to switch between three different characters. Music and movement seems really cool. Looking forward to playing more of it.
And just as a reminder, one of the little achievements in that game involves you turning back and noping out immediately upon starting the game.
Oh, damn. I'll have to do that.
Yeah, worth it just to turn left, and then it takes less than 5 minutes, and you get a little achievement.
That's funny. But yeah, that's
your time is up.
That's the Metroid Minute. Still have not beaten Silk Song because it's frustrating as hell.
Will I beat Resident Evil 9 a fourth time before you do?
You might beat it a sixth time.
Maybe, probably. I don't know. I don't know how close I am to the end, so I could not guess.
It's true. Yeah. True. Where did you stop?
And I don't want you to tell me. Wherever you saw me stop last night.
I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah.
I don't think. No, you were in the flooded warehouse. Did you get the batteries for the garage door? Oh yeah, and then you did the shortcut to get back.
Yeah.
And then you stopped. Yeah. I think.
Yes.
So you didn't get to the
Scott Pilgrim.
Did not get to the shoot the glass part. Oh.
Okay. We don't have to rush this time. It's nice to be able to speed through, but still take.
Yeah. So I'm still playing Resident Evil 9.
Why is this game giving me so much shit if I have a strict weight limit?
That's just Bethesda games, my dude.
There's a perk you can get that lets you fast travel.
I aggressively don't like this game. Oh, yeah.
Didn't spend money on it.
Yeah, so I'm playing Resident Evil 9, and yeah, I'm not going to spoil anything. I'm just going to say I'm at the point where I can blow open the gate.
Yeah.
I got all the pieces of the things, because I, you know, was playing it a lot and made some significant progress, and I love the game. And of course, I'm going to finish it, and I'm sure I'll play through it at least two more times after that to get achievements and infinite ammo and all that cool shit. But I kind of ended up buying Pokemon Pokopia. So I'm playing that right now.
I'm saying that game is selling out.
Yeah. What happened was I jumped on the Nintendo store website, and there was a hoodie and a t-shirt I'd been looking at for a while. And there was also a couple things I wanted to buy with platinum points from, there was like some Metroid posters and stuff, but I didn't want to pay the shipping. So I just waited until I found two things I wanted, then spent 2000 platinum points to get two Metroid items and got free shipping. And I was going to throw in Pokopia, but it was out of stock. The thing is, it's a game key card anyways, so I just bought a digital. Yeah. But I have been hearing that Amazon apparently is selling,
like Best Buy are advertising that they're restocked.
Yeah. But also I heard Amazon was trying to charge $80 for it now. It's like, oh, come on. So
absolutely zero reason to do that. That's insane.
Nope. So since it was a game key card anyways, I'll just buy it digital. Who cares? I know I'm going to like it. I know I'm not going to want to resell it. And man, this game rocks, let me tell you. So
yeah, the general consensus seems to be they really knocked it out of the park.
They did. And it's, you know, early on when they showed it off the first time, my thought was, oh, okay, it's Animal Crossing Pokemon. No, it's Dragon Quest Builders Pokemon. It's great.
That was my original impression just watching the trailer. I was like, this looks exactly like Dragon Quest Builders.
I didn't pick up on that, no. But then I started playing it, and it's like, yes, this is great. So
much of the staff shared with DQ Builders too.
Yes. So, and actually, the way that you get new Pokemon to spawn in reminds me of Viva Pinata a little bit, because what happens is you...
Oh man, that's a flash from the past.
Yeah, I wish they would have kept that series going longer, but basically, like, if you put four clumps of grass together, that can form a habitat, and then there's a number of different Pokemon that can spawn in there, and it becomes its home, right? And what happens is you find almost like these blueprints that will tell you how to, you know, different habitats that you can set up. Although it won't always tell you which Pokemon you're likely to attract in the process. So if you put four pieces of grass next to water, you might get a Slowpoke. You know, if you do four pieces of grass next to a rock, you might get something else, you know. And there's a quest where you find a poor Onyx trapped in a cave, and he's too weak and tired to be able to, like, just bust through it. So you got to go through a whole quest to rescue him. So then he's like, oh, well, you know, I don't have a home. So he wants four pieces of dry grass and a special kind of rock, but I can't find the rock, and now I feel bad because the poor guy has nowhere to live.
I think my favorite image from this video game that I've seen on social media was someone showing a fucking Magikarp sleeping on a, like, sleeping next to a fire on a, like, sitting on a log. And it's like, I don't know what you're doing there, buddy, but I'm glad you're having a good time.
Yeah. Magikarp, you find a Magikarp, and basically, if there's a fishing pole with a stool next to it, he will spawn there and then claim it as his home. It's really cool. All these different things that you do, all these habitats you set up to get them to come in, and then you can get them to build houses that you can live in or they can live in. And you get all these quests that give you points, and then you spend that on items. And it just has a very good kind of progression system. There's, you know, Pokemon have requests, And then sometimes they're just, you make them happy, and then they're like, here, I found something for you. And they give you like a rock or a stick, and it's like, well, I don't need it, but it's the thought that counts, really.
Yeah, yeah. It's very sweet of them to think of you.
Yeah. And so you do all these nice things for the Pokemon, they do nice things for you, and you keep building up your trainer level. And so I just made it to a second area that might or might not be Vermilion City, but it's been destroyed, and I'm trying to restore electricity. So there's no combat in the game, there's no catching and training, but it doesn't need it. It's like Dragon Quest Builders.
Plenty of goal structure without that.
Yeah, you get all these awesome like quests that you do, and you get meaningful rewards. And unlike Animal Crossing, it very rarely tells you, oh, you got to wait till tomorrow. You know, like it'll give you an ETA on when a building will be finished constructing. And like last night I was playing very late, and it said, dude, you need to wait till tomorrow for these giant buildings to go up. And I was like, yeah, that's fair. And then today I signed in, of course, everything was built. And yeah, so I got two different towns I'm trying to manage and build up. And I don't know, like I think I'm doing a good job with this, but I have seen, of course, some screenshots from other people's games that make my towns look like dog shit, but you know,
that's kind of normal for a builder game.
Yeah, so every time I think,
yeah, some people are city planners at heart.
That's what I mean. If it's like, am I autistic? It's like, no, probably not. Maybe not, but
not, man, that kind of autistic.
No, you're not.
Yeah, there's pretty specific kinds.
Yeah, so I don't know what kind I would be, but I'm not the kind that plays a game like Minecraft for 1,000 hours and builds Taj Mahal. You know, I'm not going to do that. But I think I put an adequate amount of time into this to just have a presentable looking place. Yeah, and this is a Switch 2 exclusive, and it's 60 FPS. Graphics look good, and you've got good draw distance and everything. Like, I'm just really impressed with this game. So that's mainly what I've been playing. Resident Evil. Yeah, it's so I'm playing Resident Evil 9, and then I'm playing Pokemon Pokapia, two games that could not be any more different.
But we call that a study in contrast.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So and that's what I got for you. That's all I've been playing. Oh, and also, of course, Scott Pilgrim EX. We played that last night, had some fun in the two-player mode, and yeah, that is just has so many improvements over the previous game, and I really like it so far. That's doing like it has this kind of open world thing going on, which I think is cool. And same thing, it's even more RPG-ish. So you level up and get XP, and then you have quests and you run around town. And we had established that the reason you start at level 16 is because that was the level cap in the previous game.
That's very funny to me.
Yeah. And what I like most, though, is now there's different characters who have unique fighting styles. So the previous game, they all kind of play the same, you know, Scott and Steven Stills and Kim Pine, they all kind of have the same fighting style. But in this one, you can play as some of Ramona's exes, and they have, you know, unique ways of playing. You can be Gideon, you can be...
Finally, I can be Gordon Goose.
Yeah, I can be... I'm Roxanne Richter, the ninja girl, she's cool. I ran into goth young Neil. I thought that was clever.
They really go into like what if there's just alternate versions of people running around, which is why the fucking game starts with fucking Metal Scott.
Yeah, like the characters know who he is, but we don't.
It's implied that Scott and everyone else is used to running into Metal Scott, but he is new. yeah, that's a fun sort of like evolution of River City Ransom. And it feels a lot better in the hand than the original did.
Yeah, and of course this game is very meta, so there's a part where in the background you can clearly see one of the whales from Super Mario Brothers 2, the American version, and then there was a part where I clearly saw the tree from Kirby, but then also a girl from Brian Lee O'Malley's other book, Seconds. So I thought, that's neat. Yeah, cool. A lot of cool Easter eggs everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, I don't know if Gaijin told us what he's been playing yet.
You haven't heard yet.
Well, I just had got a game over and lost two levels in Wiseman's World. So,
oof.
Need to save more often. And just planning out how I'm going to present the review on this for... Also need to review some footage of the original game from 16 years ago. Just to get a better handle on how the graphics have been improved.
Yeah.
So the sprite work appears to be practically the same, which is actually good because it's really good sprite work.
Mm-hmm.
And... somebody went and redid all of the character portraits, so they're no longer highly pixelated for DS. And, generally the entire user interface got revamped. All good.
But is the game good?
I'm gonna use the rest.
I mean, it's a mid-tier DS game from 16 years ago. I am still very amazed that I am playing it at all. Considering I have not actually, I don't think I've seen it in stores, any store for like 14 years at this point. So, I even double checked this past weekend. I could not find it in any of the used game stores.
Oh, wow.
So not even a placeholder box. So, it is obscure at this point. So I would really like to hear how this got. How anybody managed to arrange for this to be released internationally after 16 years. I'm sure there's some sort of weird story in there. But, yeah. Otherwise, I'm mostly just fighting a headache over here. Ow.
I'm discovering Fallout 4 is kind of bad. I don't like it.
It was good
at all.
It was good for its time.
It sucks, man. Come on.
I loved that game.
This game sucks. But it runs at 60 frames per second on the Switch too. If it's your kind of thing, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, it looks pretty good. It looks way better than those screenshots they showed off. They must have done a day one batch or something.
Let's see, what's the version number on this? Yeah, it's probably gotten some patches. All right, did everyone go? Should we start answering some questions?
Yeah, we should start answering some questions.
Okay.
Do we have any?
We have like 10.
Oh, yeah, because the RP Gamer channel opened up. Oh, nice. Okay. I was like, does Fire Miner know we're on the Ask Wheels channel? But it's a moot point now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's check these out.
Sure.
Okay. Some of these are spoilers, so I won't talk about them. Yeah. So I will skip past the spoilers and say... Capcom is too scared to put Leon to a retirement home, and so tried to find a way to justify him looking handsome forever. Will we ever see Wrinkly Ada or Jill? We're not going to see Wrinkly any of them. We saw Chris in his 60s, and he looked fine. They don't need a justification to do that. They just do it.
Well, I thought as part of the canon, didn't they say that Jill just doesn't age anymore?
Kind of like it's ambiguous how much she still has that after RE5 because we haven't seen her that much.
Because I watched that Death Island CG movie and it wasn't terrible. I mean,
you are part of a rarefied few,
I know. And so I like that they got everybody back together, like they bring back Rebecca. You've got all the people you want, but
what about Barry?
Barry wasn't in there. Oh, yeah.
I would like to bring up that Barry, as of Resident Evil 9, would be in his 70s.
Is he even alive?
They have never confirmed him dead, so yes.
Okay.
Any character who has not been confirmed dead is alive. But yeah, like, the answer is that they're just gonna, like, part of the reason they keep doing remakes and interquels is that they can get away with that. I think with RE9, like, to hit the follow-up question, can either Grace and Rose shoulder a new RE game on their shoulders alone? I think that, like, they are interesting and open enough characters who clearly have fans, so you could probably make them happen. Honestly, if they were going to do that, I would probably consider giving a secondary role to a classic character the same way they did this time. Pull Claire out. She hasn't been used in a while. But yeah, I would like to point out that they're clearly aware of this. The youngest character from Resident Evil 1 would canonically be in her late 40s.
Oh, jeez.
Rebecca was 18 in Resident Evil 1. Jeez. And it has been 28 years. So she would now be 46. It's wild playing Resident Evil 9 and, like, seeing the child from RE2 be in her late 30s.
Sherry, yeah.
Time keeps on slipping, baby.
I feel but, like yeah, they I should have aware stopped of using exact dates at some point.
It's too, no, they can't. That's know, the problem. They can't. This isn't Street Fighter. This can't be in a relative timeline. It's too late for that. And honestly, I think that RE9's willingness to grapple with the fact that it's been that goddamn long is one of its strengths. I think that the current development team is confident enough that they might, we might see a Grace game that has a classic character but relegates that classic character to a secondary role, or a Rose game that does that. The problem with doing a Rose game is that entails setting the game deep into the future, like still 10 years away. I think the Rose DLC from RE Village takes place in 2036.
Oh, geez. Oh, that's right. Because she was a baby in Village. That's right.
Yeah, she's a baby in Village, and she is turning 18 in that DLC. So,
but all things considered, from what I know of the storyline of Village, having her artificially age up at a 5x rate would not be out of the realm of possibility.
They could have done that, but they very specifically did not go with that possibility.
Okay.
The DLC makes it clear that it has been many years.
Okay.
And I was just thinking that I think I remembered reading that. So Jill's Resident Evil 3 remake design was so popular that they decided she doesn't age anymore so that they had an excuse to use use that model in the CG movies. I don't know if that's true, but I don't think
that's true at all.
Okay.
I would point out that if they were making that excuse, then she would have to look like she does in RE5.
When she suddenly went blonde for no reason.
Yeah, presumably that was something to do with the viruses. Whatever, it doesn't matter. Resident Evil canon is stupid.
It doesn't make any sense.
That's why we love it.
But yeah, to answer the actual question, can either Grace or Rose shoulder a new RE game on their shoulders alone? I think so.
I think Grace can, now that she's been in a game already, and like you said, with Rose, it was screw up with the timeline. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Rose is a compelling enough character to carry games. I don't think that's the thing. You can, they showed with 7 and 8, you can just make a new person. People will accept it if you're willing to do it.
Yeah.
People might have their ups and downs about Ethan Winters, but in general, Ethan has fans, and, there's no reason to, Grace obviously definitely has fans already. This is not a case of we made a Steve Burnside. That's the kind of character that can't carry a game. You made a character who the fandom immediately rejected like a bad lung transplant. Yeah, no. But but with, you know, with characters who like were popular, like you don't need a lot of excuses. You can bring back Grace and she can be like you don't need a lot of excuses. You just like, oops, this person got thrust into another zombie apocalypse. And then that happens.
Whoopsie, how does this keep happening? Oh no.
It is absolutely fucked up that Leon's like license plate has 9642 on it, just as a joke about how many of these he's been in. Or you see, those are the ones where he's playable. those also aren't even the only games he's playable in. He was also playable in the Game Boy Color game that is no longer canon. And I won't answer the next question because it involves spoilers. Wheels has not finished it, and neither has Joe, so I won't answer that. I would say, to be oblique about it, just so that I can answer it for Fireminer's own question. I think that it's very possible that we see something like that happen again, but they also made it clear that such a thing is certainly not something that the way it's handled in this game makes it clear that they see it as diminishing returns. In a recent Falcom shareholders meeting, someone asked Toshihiro Kondo about the potential problem of East 10 Proud Nordics creating an expectation among East fans that they should just wait for the complete version of the future games. Kondo said that Proud Nordics only existed because of technical and narrative difficulties that made them unable to package as a DLC, and future East games would avoid that. Yeah, I mean, that's what happens. A lot of games that have big DLCs, you have to build them in a way to allow that to happen. Otherwise, you have to... getting them in tends to be really hacky, whatever the hell was going on with the additions being made to, say, Dark Souls 1. It's really hard to get DLC to fit in a game that's not really built to accept it. And the more that you fuck with the structure of a game, the more it becomes difficult. So when people complain that why wasn't Persona 5 Royal a DLC for Persona 5, it's because it's fucking with so many elements of the core game.
Yes.
That absolutely did not have a clean way to hook into them and replace them.
Yeah. They redid all the dungeons and then there's a grappling hook. There's the seeds that you find.
All new of the Personas had their shit monkeyed with. There's just too much. When you get deep into the game, there's just not a lot of capacity to go in and in a way that's technically feasible. So, Proud Nordics, I have not played side by side with Nordics, so I don't know how much that applies here and how much it was just that the game wasn't really built with DLC in mind at all.
Yeah, I'm playing Proud Nordics right now, but I didn't play the original, so I couldn't tell you what's different, but I'm playing on PS5 and it's an impressive game. I like how it looks, good performance. So quality mode is 60 FPS, and then you have a 120 FPS mode if you want it. I haven't been using that. Because I've been streaming it, and Twitch is capped at 60.
That's not
going
to show up at all,
right? And of course, I got a free copy from Paws and Chris, and thank you again. So those streams have been going pretty well. I'll talk about them more when we do our plugs. But I'm impressed with the game so far. But I think I might have been a little upset if I had played through the original, and then they said, "Oh no, you got to pay $70 to play the updated version." I wouldn't have been happy about that, I don't think.
So we've got this next one as a follow-up. That's not per se a question, but I do want to talk about it briefly. Hope that will be the case with their upcoming Dragon Slayer games. It's about time to resurrect their old franchises, and they need a good first impression. I'm going to be real. Saying you're resurrecting Dragon Slayer is one of the most meaningless things you can possibly say, because so many things were labeled Dragon Slayer. I'm very curious what they mean by it.
How is Dragon Slayer's not dead? I was just playing Legend of Heroes Trails of the Sky Chapter 2 earlier.
Listen, yeah. only Legend of Heroes 1 and 2 are officially Dragon Slayer games.
Yeah, they're all Dragon Slayer games to me.
Do you actually kill a dragon in the Trails games?
Yeah.
There is no Dragon Slayer weapon.
Huh.
Like, the Dragon Slayer weapon is in Legend of Heroes 1 and 2. But also, Legend of Heroes 2, again, if you've never played that, if you've never seen it, it's fucking weird, and it's a shame that it's not in English, and there is for English language players that just want to hear more about it, there is a good YouTube video by a channel called Basement Brothers that goes over the entire progression of that game and why it's completely bizarre.
Is it as weird as Sorcerian? Because I have played that one.
So Sorcerian and Dragon Slayer 2, not Dragon Slayer, Legend of Heroes 2 are weird for really different reasons. Because Legend of Heroes 2 is building off Legend of Heroes 1, and when you start Legend of Heroes, when you finish an area in Legend of Heroes 1, you drive all the monsters out of wherever you were, and so there's no more random encounters on the world map. And Legend of Heroes 2 is like, yeah, there's no more encounters on the world map, because you, in Legend of Heroes 1, your dad drove out everything that caused random encounters. And so you're like having to start the game trying to essentially find where the plot starts by wandering around this combatless like world map from the first game until you eventually like find your way down underground, and then you can kind of start the actual game, and then it like retcons the actual like it, or I don't even think it's a retcon, like I think it was probably something they at least kind of had in mind, but like it adds in like this completely insane sci-fi story to Legend of Heroes 1's very mostly fairly traditional fantasy plot. It's a strange game.
Back in the early days of RPG development, when the developers were allowed to get philosophical about things.
Hero Harmony says, I could use more Tomb Raider, Jill. let's see. In light of Project Helix, for those not paying attention, that was Microsoft announcing their next video game console under the title of Project Helix. They always give these things the most, like, kind of cringy, try-hard names. We've had, I think the original Xbox was the Direct Xbox. The 360 was Xenon. The Xbox One was Durango. The Xbox One X was like Project Scarlet.
Yeah,
still better than the X-Bone.
They really hated the term X-Bone, and then eventually they had to give up and just buy the name, the domain rights. God, what was the Series X's code name?
Scorpion.
Yeah, it was Scorpio or something. And yeah, so now we've got Project Helix. I remember NeoGraph user made a long thread years ago about how the Xbox should have been replaced later so that it could be built with should have been released later so that it could be built with AMD Athlon XP CPU and Microsoft Windows XP. I don't think it'd matter given the PS2's dominance, but with the Xbox released at the time it was, with Halo as a launch game, did it contribute anything to its limited success? I think that you couldn't afford to release the Xbox later than you did. Like, Microsoft, like, needed to be, if they wanted to make a PS2 competitor, and that's what they were designing, it needed to be out around when it was. Otherwise, like, the PS2 was already pretty dominant. There wasn't much you could, the original Xbox does not do, like, There's often a narrative that forms around that generation that the PS2 came in first, the Xbox came in second, GameCube came in third. And that is literally true from the numbers and is also a completely insane way to describe it. Because what happened was that, like, two systems got, like, violently and viciously stomped into the ground, and one of them was stomped with a slightly heavier boot. like, we were talking... One system that sold 150 million units, one system that sold 25 million units, and one system that sold 22 million units.
Is the Switch 2 already passed?
Not as of the last report. With Pocopia, it might. it might pass that before the end of the year. By which I mean before the end of its first year.
It was funny on Saturday Night Live. I think it was two Saturdays ago during the cold open. They actually referenced the GameCube and oh, it was a great system, but hard to develop for, and it was hilarious.
That's also an insane thing to say, because like the GameCube was no harder to develop for than anything else, and definitely easier to develop for than the PS2.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the PS2, infamously a quirky piece of machinery. But yeah, like I will never forget the, if you've never read it, I've brought this up a number of times before, but I'm going to say it again. One of the funniest interviews I've ever seen was like right before The Bouncer came out. There's a translation. I think it's on like Shmuplations. But it's right before The Bouncer came out, so early in the PS2's lifetime, early 2001 in the US. Like, there's an interview with, like, Takashi Tokita and Tetsuya Nomura and a few other people from Square, and they get asked about developing on the PS2, and the first thing out of their mouths is, it was harder than we were expecting. It's very funny. But yeah, like, the Xbox needs to launch when it does, or else it cedes too much ground to two established competitors, and it needs to launch with, and like Halo being the thing that breaks console first person shooters wide open, you can clearly see things happening in that space. And I think Halo being later, it would still be like quality, but it needs to be early enough that it's the thing that breaks it, or else the Xbox doesn't have something to hang its hat on. Mm-hmm. I don't think that like having an AMD Athlon CPU really changes the calculus at all. Even if they launched at the same time, I don't think it really changes that much. You still see people like, you still see ports of PC games to Xbox that don't come to PS2 and GameCube because it's just too complicated and too hard. It just doesn't happen. But that makes that easier to do, but it doesn't change the quantity or the numbers. Like you still get Doom 3 like in 2005 because that's when Doom 3 comes out. You still get Half-Life 2 in 2005 because that's, you know, following on the heels of Half-Life 2. There's just not, and those are the big PC games of the time. It's like, what are the other ones? Well, you could port some of the RTSs. Those were still popular. Yeah, well, those still run poorly because they're on controller. Like, not even like half of that console generation, people are trying to crack how do we make RTSs work on controller. And eventually, what happens is people stop caring enough about RTSs to make that a worthwhile attempt. that's what stops it. But yeah.
Hey, I just found Score Bunny.
Oh, ooh. Hey.
A little nerd. Okay.
Did you have to build a soccer field for him? Or?
No, I just I went through a different door to get to a different area, and there's red grass, so four patches of red grass can potentially summon several different Pokemon, including Score Bunny. Yeah, it was kind of boring, but hey, he's cute.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. I think every area has to give you a Pokemon that's capable of lighting fires, I think. So I think that's okay, his purpose.
We're going to hit a couple more questions. There's a recent piece of news about how a third-party analyst concluded that Nintendo's cheaper Japan exclusive Switch 2 model might be causing them to lose $160 per unit. I assume they're losing a lot. I assume that it's probably not $160 per unit, because that is a number that would make essentially everyone involved want to die. But I'd probably guess
that would be a significant amount of the cost of a Switch 2.
Yeah, I mean, those Japan-only units are cheap. But in relative terms, but which meant while the Switch 2 sold best in Japan, profitability has been lagging in two other regions. Yeah, like, you know, like whatever they're charging in the US and Europe is probably much more a much more favorable number. Like, I'm sure that it's still not a huge profit margin given the way that parts sourcing is right now, but.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like that exists to ensure that there is a foothold in the homeland. That like there's a reason they do that, And it seems to be something that consumers have responded to on not just a monetary level, but also on like a cultural level, because Sony's tried to do something similar with the PS5. There's now a PS5 Japan only version, but it's not moving numbers the way the Switch 2 is. And like some of that is like just one of them is new and the other is 6 years old. But I think some of that is also just the feeling that like one of these feels more, I don't know, it feels more like someone went out of their way to make this happen instead of someone like realizing they need to course correct. But yeah, the analyst notes that the average Japanese household tends to buy fewer units of the same console. The 3DS, 2DS line are priced so that people could just buy multiple machines like candy. It's a shame that the Switch 2's price makes it impossible. Yeah, there's no way to make things of current computational power that cheaply anymore. It's a nightmare, it's hell, and it's being made worse by worthless machines. But it is what it is. None of the... Even before the prices started going up, none of the current consoles had anything that resembles a real price drop. Prices had started creeping up in other regions before North America, like before the current squeeze, like prices had crept up on like the PS5 in various regions. It just is like some of it is the understanding that like with the regions they have, the market is saturated. We have determined how many people will purchase consoles and now we are trying to soak existing users. But some of it is also, and some of it is the current price squeeze that has been decimating all consumer electronics. It's the reason that the Steam machine is now coming out on Valve time.
Yeah,
there's just no escaping that. Like, you cannot make something that has appreciably more compute power than a Switch and like do so at a price that is similar to a Switch. But yeah. Okay, so let's hit some these ones are, there's some more question here. I previously asked you about the low desirability of cosmetic and item DLCs. Does anyone here remember a PS3 game called Cross Edge? Not when I can help it.
Why? Why? What did we do to deserve this?
That game requires a lot of grinding unless you have purchased the DLC and got the supplemental items. It's a very MMO business strategy, but I wonder how many single-player games also did it. Not that many. Like, as what you'll sometimes see is that things get made appreciably more irritating for long-term, like, single or limited multiplayer games. Like, how to put this? I remember some of the Assassin's Creed games have been balanced and rebalanced post-release. When people, like, when Ubisoft gets too transparent with trying to sell boosters. I remember Namco way back in the day, for Tales of Vesperia in 2006, would sell you money and levels. And it was like a few dollars per, and it was just one of those things where it was like the game clearly wasn't balanced around it, and it was baffling why you would purchase it, but it was an option they were clearly experimenting with. Mm-hmm. I think ultimately what they found is that these mostly just give the game bad word of mouth just by existing. And so usually what ends up happening is that they use them as pre-order incentives. I think that's as much as really ended up happening with pure single-player games. Like, here's a pre-order incentive. You start with extra money and a couple items. But, like, trying to sell them, like, you might sell those same special items in post-launch DLC for a couple bucks. But ultimately, like, doing a bunch of repurchasable like boosters has largely fallen out of favor among AAA just because it causes negative publicity without actually getting a lot of additional money, even though like it is the cheapest possible DLC. Like you aren't even making a new, like a new model or anything like that. You're just saying like, here, we'll increase a counter in your game save file. But it ultimately is just not, it's not like part of the reason you don't like, you would see this a lot if it was, if it had worked. But what else was I going to say about this? There was something pretty specific I wanted to bring up. Yeah, like the evilest version of this I have seen in a game that like is multiplayer, but a lot of people play single player. I've ranted about this before, but like Gran Turismo 7 is still one of the most like, oh, we're just soaking the player base, like absolutely wrecking them, because like not only is that a game that has a button that you can press that's literally on every menu, that's a give Sony $20 button, not only does it have loot boxes, those loot boxes do not contain cars. They contain invitations to purchase cars for a limited time. And when you purchase those cars, they may be as many as $250. And the justification given was, we feel that the price in game should purchase the should reflect the value of the car in real life. So yes, if you want a digital Ferrari, it will cost you hundreds of dollars, more than the game, more than purchasing the game did. Gran Turismo 7 still pisses me off. It's been years, and it just makes me so mad that they did that and got away with it. I would like to point out that what ties it to this question is that many player, you could get credits, like that was what giving Sony $20 gave you. It gave you in-game credits. And as people divined ways that earning credits could be sped up and relatively automated, Sony nerfed them over and over to make them less profitable so that you would have to give them money to get the cars.
Jeez.
Like, it really is appalling to me that, like, they were not raked over the coals for this for more than a day or so. And the time that they were most raked over the coals was the fact that it is an always online game. And for about 36 hours in its first week, it was just not playable at all.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, I like that one is still like one of the most shameful displays that any of the first party companies has done. Like genuinely, I can't believe that you are doing this to like people who paid $500 for your console and $70 for your game.
Oh, and they bought the VR headset too, didn't they?
That was also an option. You could do that. You didn't need it, so I'm not counting
okay.
it. Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Gran Turismo 7 is one of the only first-party VR2 games.
Yes,
because the VR2 is not backwards compatible with VR1.
And was almost immediately sent to hell after failing to do the numbers they wanted it to. Let's see. Two advantages of fixed perspective. Okay, so we're hitting some quick ones that I assume also came up because of Resident Evil, because we are thinking about Resident Evil now. Two advantages of fixed perspective are that it allows the artist to focus on making the background as pretty as possible and lets the viewers really see the scale of the characters and objects against their surroundings. Yeah.
Yeah.
But as I play Oni Musume 2 Remastered, I realize one more thing. Onimusha 2 Remaster, I realized one more thing. How often do you rotate the camera and look at the front of characters in a modern third-person game? And Onimusha has some extremely nice-looking models for the time. I usually do it at least a few times, especially if I get something new that changes how my character looks, or if I can find a good, cool-looking angle to screenshot. That's usually it for me. But yeah, Onimusha, like, Onimusha 2 is kind of Capcom at the height of its power in terms of pre-rendered backgrounds. Like, it's about a year after Resident Evil, like, maybe 6 months after Resident Evil Remake. And Resident Evil Remake is, like, as far as I'm concerned, the undisputed pinnacle of pre-rendered backgrounds. Like, the most like a game that like 24 years on from its release still looks incredible, despite having a fairly realistic art style. And Onimusha 2 is not up to that standard, but it's still a damn good looking game. All of the gorgeous pre-rendering tech and know-how that existed then is scattered to the winds now. If you saw developers try pre-rendered on a AAA backgrounds on a AAA game now, you would probably, if they tried to use similar styling to that, it would probably take them a while to learn it again, just because like games, the concerns of modeling and making an environment that needs to be good looking from every angle are very different from, I'm just making something that will look good from this angle alone, and I'm like very carefully balancing how it looks from this angle so that it will look perfect. Actually, I was playing Resident Evil 1 earlier tonight, to like the PS1 version, to show some friends, and it's wild to like look at how much better they get at pre-rendered backgrounds from Resident Evil 1 to Resident Evil 2. Because Resident Evil 1, when I look at them, I'm like, yeah, I could see some of these environments just sort of being in mist, which, you know, was a great-looking game, but was also a game from like 1993. And it has certain, like, certain artistic mismatches that like RE2 completely smooths out. Gorgeous game, incredible looking. Okay. Is it strange to think back about how both the launch model PS3 and Wii looked ugly to me, but they got better with later revisions, but the launch model Xbox 360 looked the best and the subsequent revisions just got more boring? Honestly, I don't remember like any revision of the Wii looking particularly different. Like, there is the Wii Mini, but I would honestly say that looks really cheap. I do think that the launch model PS3 is a fucking hideous machine.
Yes, it is.
Back in the day, it got compared to a grill. It was big and bulky and ugly, and I was glad when it got swapped out. And then it got swapped out again for something that felt cheap, but still was at least small. So... unfortunately, the PS5 is monstrously hideous no matter which version you get. But yeah, the 360, there was never an ugly 360, but the later 360s definitely don't have much character. They're just boxes. And then the Xbox One's industrial design is bad. Oh, wait, that's it. There is actually a 360 that's kind of ugly, and it's the ones that come out right as the Xbox One comes out and shares the original Xbox One's, like, weird VCR industrial design. But, yeah. I had the Xbox 360E, the last revision. That must be the one that I was just referencing. And it really looked like a piece of appliance. At least it has the courtesy to look unassuming, unlike the PS4 Pro. Now, the PS4 was meant to evoke the PS2's look, but it will never stop looking like a stack of stone slabs. It took up too much space to me. I guess that's why I like how the PS5 looks. I can understand that. I am mostly fine with the weird parallelogram. I like it more than the fins on the PS5 that keep getting caught on my pant legs. I hate that. I hate the fins. That's really it. It's just the fins, like, they cause me problems. Last time you talked about FF, but yeah, the parallelogram look for the PS4 was strange. The PS2, like, that look was actually like essentially purchased, pre-built from the proposed look of the Atari Falcon, which was their sort of last home computer before that whole thing died. But yeah, if you go look up like comparison shots, it's like, oh yeah, that's just what the PS2 looked like. Steve, last time you talked about FF10 was when I brought up the auto abilities, but it's a pre-battle mechanic. Which RPG has the highest number of different mechanics stuffed into combat? Resonance of Fate isn't that complicated when you get the hang of it. Yeah, Resonance of Fate is more a case of like a handful of mechanics interacting in ways that are non-traditional and confusing the hell out of people.
Yeah.
But in terms of the number of mechanics, it's pretty Spartan. turn-based RPGs don't usually have that many of these, because once you start adding a ton of them in, you start kind of moving away from, like, you start turning into something else. Like, if there's movement mechanics, you start turning more into a strategy RPG. If there's, like, timing mechanics, you start turning into an action RPG. So, like, you know, like, my menu in, say, Final Fantasy VII, because that's the one that I think can have, like, the largest in-game, in-combat menu. My menu might be huge, but, like, they're really just variants on the same handful of things. Like, you know, my menu has summon and magic, but those are kind of the same thing. They're just organizationally different. It has death blow, but and double cut, but those are both just variants on attack with different, with different like things affecting them. You can add some other stuff that kind of does different things, like stealing and throwing. Like, those are kind of, I consider those distinct enough to be separate mechanics from casting magic or attacking, but you end up with it's limited what you can do in the space without kind of turning it, like, the more mechanics you throw in, the more you're kind of just turning into a strategy RPG. If we start including, like, you know, non-traditional turn-based RPGs, which I just now look at and realize that the question that Fireminer's asking does not specify, so it's probably intended to include more. It's probably something in that tactical RPG bucket, but it's probably also something that, like, has become obscure because it's just bastard hard. You know, because, like, you look at something like FF Tactics, and FF Tactics is already hard enough to turn away a lot of people, and it's a relatively, relatively complex mechanically, it's still, like, you know, most of those mechanics are in the pre-battle. But yeah, it's probably, like, one of the Ogre Battle games, if I were to have to guess. But I'm not super familiar with those, so that's just me, like, guessing based on what kinds of things Yasumi Matsuno likes to do. For action RPGs, like, I feel like action RPGs probably have enough variations that there's definitely enough sicko mode games that one of them might have a reasonable claim to being, like, the most mechanically dense RPG you can think of. But, like, the ones, like, as with turn-based and strategy RPGs, the ones that do well tend to be the ones that have a handful of mechanics that are made interesting by, like, pre-battle setup interesting enemy design. Because, like, you look at, say, the biggest action RPGs around now would be From Software, like the Souls games, like Elden Ring and all that shit. And those are, like, hard, but there's not actually that much you're, like, once you're actually in combat, there's only a handful of mechanics to really worry about. Like, like dodging, spacing, attack, stamina, parrying. Those, and all of those are kind of, like, in their, are sort of interlinked. So, like, when I say stamina, I'm just talking about how stamina affects all of those. But yeah, like, and that's, like, enough that a lot of players feel kind of overwhelmed by it, which is why the game's got that reputation for being difficult. The more you stack on top of that, the more obscure you end up getting, because you end up having to target people who are, like, sickos that think that that's too simple. But yeah, speaking of Resident Evil, like, yeah, a Tri-Ace game might also be somewhere in here with some of their tendency to include weird systems, even if Resonance of Fate probably isn't it. Speaking of Residents of Fate, in those turn-based RPGs where you can move your characters, a lot of them don't care about terrain, height, or obstacles, and movement is purely about getting the enemy inside your AoE attack. Why don't more games care about those things? Is it because they want to keep being an RPG instead of being a strategy game? I think that's really it. Like, once you start having to worry about terrain and shit, you're moving into strategy RPG, and those traditionally have just not sold as well as, like, more standard RPGs. Like, that really comes... I think that ends up being the long and short of it. We wanted to make an RPG, and strategy RPGs tend to sell less because they are considered more hardcore. Okay.
Will we ever get a Valkyria Chronicles 5?
No. No one bought 4.
Like, I'll be happy if I'm wrong eventually. I'll be happy if I'm wrong eventually, but I don't think so.
Yeah, no, it's... I'm calling it. Time of Death. Valkyria Chronicles 4 release. People didn't buy it.
Fighter 3 did...
So people did not sell.
Yeah, like Valkyria Chronicles is one of those franchises I would most describe as people love talking about how much they want to support it, and then when it comes out, they don't support it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of... Yeah.
Yeah, we did. We certainly did. And we were one of the few.
I bought that crappy PSP game. I bought the second game.
I'm sorry, that game sucks.
Yeah. That is the nadir.
Yeah.
But yeah. Like that. What I was gonna say was like, there's certain kinds of games that people will always talk about how they want and would support, and then like when it comes out, it's like there's always reasons that it doesn't happen. It's too hard. Is common for strategy RPGs. Then you'll get things that are like action games that are like really fast. Those will get it's too hard and it's too short. Like I can't believe they're making me pay $60 for like. This 2 to 3 hour action game or beat 'em up or whatever, but yeah, Valkyria falls squarely into that. Virtua Fighter 3 did this thing with terrain. Remember, it's weird that it happened twice, but both Saturn port of Virtua Fighter and Dreamcast port of Virtua Fighter 3 are pretty rough around the edges, and they are both launch games. To think that Sega could overlook something as obvious as making sure their headliners were in a good state and could woo in new console buyers, I honestly think that, like. The Dreamcast failure to really take off in Japan is down to two elements of Virtua Fighter, and that's very sad. The first is that the Virtua Fighter 3 TV port is, as you mentioned, pretty rough. And the second is that Virtua Fighter 3 itself was not popular. I think that's probably part of why they weren't as concerned with getting it right for the Dreamcast. But ultimately, that meant that they had nothing else that, like, the hardcore Japanese fans who loved the Saturn would jump on for. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you get something like Sonic Adventure, which is supposed to be a big appeal title, but, like, you know, Sonic wasn't unpopular in Japan, but he wasn't system seller popular in Japan at that point. Like, and, you know, the promise of, like, finally experience Sonic in 3D held more appeal in the West, where Sonic was system seller popular.
Yes. I got the Genesis 2 system with Sonic 2, and I loved it.
Sonic Tuesday. But, yeah.
Yes.
Sega didn't even port... The funnier part to me is that Virtua Fighter 3 port on Dreamcast, I don't even think Sega ported internally. I think they farmed that one out to Genki.
Yeah, I recall playing Virtua Fighter 2 in the arcade, but I didn't even like it that much, so I had no interest in anything beyond that, really.
Like, personally loved Virtua Fighter 2 and 4 in particular, but they very much, like, they were always big deals in Japan and not so much in the U.S., where Tekken kind of ate their lunch. But yeah, like ultimately the other problem that VF3 runs into is that it's a Model 3 game, and that means that like porting it to any console was a huge fucking pain in the ass. Okay, yeah, like the Sega Retro Wiki is confirming like that Genki was in fact the developer of Dreamcast port. Like they just did not seem to care that much. And again, I think that comes down to like hardcore Virtua fans, Virtua Fighter fans did not like 3. It was just not a popular version. Like, it added like a button, like there was an entire another button. Because like Virtua Fighter is normally very simple. It's punch, kick, and guard. Those are the 3 buttons. 3 added an evade button, and the hardcore fans just did not like that at all. So I think that ultimately the assumption was that, like, while it was important to make a home port of Virtua Fighter 3, that there was no hope of it being as important to the console's success as the port, the home port of Virtua Fighter 2 had been. God, what was the... When was Sakura Taisen 3 out? Because I think that was maybe also their one of their big, like, we need to... Like, one of the big, like, try to sell the Dreamcast in Japan games. Oh, God, that came out in 2001. That was way too goddamn late. What the fuck?
I mean, it wouldn't be Sega if there was good decision-making.
Yeah, I'm just, like, losing my mind. I assumed that they would have tried to at least get that out in the first year. I'm sure they were trying, but... God, like, honestly... Like, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking for 30 years in the future, I probably would have just told them, cancel Sakura Taisen 2 on the Saturn and make it a Dreamcast launch game. It's an April 1998 Saturn game. But, I mean, too little too late. But, like, that game by itself might have at least given it some kind of foothold in Japan. But, yeah, whatever. Okay.
It is 12:30.
Yeah, let's hit one more of these, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, whenever I think back about Vagrant Story or Legend of Legaia and their contemporaries, I think about how their attempts at chaining attacks into combos brought an action edge to the combat and how that eventually morphed into FF13. But how much fighting games did their developers play to get that idea? The influence is literally there with the Samurai Showdown RPG, but in that game, the emotion inputs are optional and you can choose to not do them. Yeah, I mean, like, especially with Legend of Legaia, it's almost entirely aesthetic. Like, you know, they look like fighting games when they're playing out, but, like, it's strictly turn-based and just memorized the button inputs, but you can also just pull up that tells you what the button inputs are, so it doesn't really matter. It's just for aesthetic. With Vagrant Story, I don't think fighting games are what they were going for with that. I think they were just more of a general... action game kind of thing, but like, Jesus Christ, speaking of games with too many goddamn mechanics, whatever the fuck's going on with Risk, how can you make Vagrant Story's combat feel more fun to play? A weapon wheel? Like, that would probably be a start, but I mean, honestly, I think it comes down to just the kind of game they were trying to design. Vagrant Story is a saga action RPG in all the most opaque ways. Like, systems interlocking within systems that determine why, as it turns out, no, that your dagger is going to just absolutely fucking fail to do anything to that ghost. Like, I think that it's... Like, yeah, there's ways to make it feel better in the hand, but I think that people would get just as pissed off at it because of its tendency to just... Like, yeah, this weapon that you were using that you liked using is now going to not be effective at all for reasons that involve multiple different systems that you're only dimly aware of because they're extremely complex and poorly explained. But yeah, so we've hit our hard cutoff time. We have to go because we will die.
Yes.
Due to daylight saving us. So I would like to hear about what I could read while I'm going to bed.
Buy my book.
Raiden,
where'd you go?
He just left.
I stepped away for one moment to get something, and he suddenly switched off. And I can't deliver, and I can't take this laptop with me because the battery keeps dying.
Oh god!
So it has to stay plugged in. What timing? Let's see. Your friendly neighborhood gaijin who fails at marketing at every turn. Yeah. Buy my yes, please. Buck. Yes, keep pressing that button, please. Hopefully somebody will listen. Yes, so, lots of stuff. I have a new book coming out under the pen name Michael Spearwater, called The Sin of Tantalus. It is, everything that, well, to be honest, it's what happens when somebody who just hates zombies and media decides to write something with zombie themes, sort of. So yes, please check that out. Please. I really have no idea what else to do anymore when it comes to trying to sell these books, because it's never working. Also I have a headache and this is not helping me right now. Ouch. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yes. So yes, Princesses of the Pizza Parlor by Michael Yatimizu. See Vainglorious Lungs of the Night, also by Michael Yatimizu. Tanuki's a Teapot. Japanese Folktales, again, Michael Yatimizu. Sin of Tantalus, Michael Spearwater, and also A Wager for Wonderlust by Michael Spearwater. Have fun. Thank you. Please enjoy. Read. Leave reviews. Thank you. Goodbye. Oh, okay.
Joe, where can we watch you?
All right. On Tuesday and Thursday nights, starting around 9 or 10 p.m., I do live streams for RP Gamer, so twitch.tv/RPGamer. I've been playing East 10 Proud Nordics. I intend to keep streaming that until I beat it or get bored. So you can check that out two nights a week. And then I participated in the Pokemon 30th anniversary feature. So that was neat. We all got to just write a little blurb about, one of our favorite games or Pokemon or both, you know, from the series. So check that out on the RP Gamer website, rpgamer.com. And then we did a Game of the Year podcast. I don't know when that's going live, but look out for it. I was on it. It's a bit late, but we had a lot of fun recording it. At least I did. So definitely consider checking that out.
It's always a good time. Highly recommend.
Yes. And so I'm currently not streaming on my own Twitch channel, which is twitch.tv/smokeandjoegamer. But that, you know, could change at some point. Maybe I'll feel like doing it again. Who knows? But you can also go to Smoke and Joe Gamer on YouTube. I've got 80 followers on there now and about 500 videos. So there's bound to be something that might pique your interest. And you can also follow me on Blue Sky and Instagram under Smoke and Joe Gamer.
FYI, that Game of the Year podcast is up on the RPG Cast
feed. Oh, it is already?
Yep.
Awesome. Yeah, so go listen to it, please. And then, so funny thing happened during that podcast is at one point I was trying to plug Q&A Quest, and I totally blanked on where people can ask questions. And in my defense, people don't ask many questions, so that's why I was a little confused as to where they were supposed to be if people had asked them. So I did say you can ask them in the chat. It, while we're recording live, as FireMiner does, that's fine. Also, if you join the RP Gamer Discord server, you can go under the podcast tab and put questions there, and we will see them.
Yeah, you can also ask them under the comment section of this very episode. Thank you for doing some of my job so I can sleep.
Wow, great. You're welcome.
But yeah, you can catch us when we stream at twitch.tv/rpgamer and twitch.tv/askwhales, usually around 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern on Mondays. But we've been trying to get a little earlier so that we are less prone to death. But yeah, you can also... but yeah, we will try to answer any questions we do get. And thanks once again to FireMiner for always keeping us with plenty to talk about.
He's our biggest fan.
Yes.
We owe him much. But yeah, you can also catch us on our sister show Shenanigans. God fucking damn you.
I'm sorry.
Like, you can also catch our sister show Shenanigans, where we just sort of play whatever. Yesterday was a mix of Resident Evil 9 and Scott Pilgrim X.
I think it'll be that again this week.
Quite likely. But otherwise, I think that about wraps it up for us. So see you, Space Cowboys.
See ya. See you.
This is Mole Man in this the morning. This is Mole Man in the morning.
Oh, God.
To you. Mole
no.
Man to you.
Mole Man, too Mole much Mole, Mole Man. Man.
You know what? He just left.
He's just... Mole Man's gone.